on May 7th, proposed bylaws amendments will be taken up for acceptance or rejection by the Pacifica National Board. If any are approved by the PNB, local station delegates' assemblies will have until no later than July 6th to take them up for acceptance or rejection. You can view an amendment concerning in-person meetings and an amendment to reduce the size of the Pacifica National Board, the two items up for review at pacifica.org. You are welcome to share comments with the National Board at pnb@pacifica.org.
Hi, I'm Bill Maher from HBO's Real Time, and you're listening to that Pinko commie radio station, KFCF in Fresno.
This is the KFCF Community Calendar. You can always find the calendar online at www.kfcf.org with lots more information. Here are some highlights.
Unitarian Universalist Church of Fresno, in collaboration with CMAC and the Fresno County Public Library, will hold a special screening of the locally produced film Our Lives Surviving the Streets of Fresno on Friday, April 10th at 7 p.m. This is a short story documentary about homelessness in Fresno, directed and produced by Lisa Lindsay, member of the UU Church. It will be followed by a panel discussion with the homeless individuals featured in the film. The event is free and open to the public and wheelchair accessible. It will be screened at the Unitarian Universalist Church, located at 2672 East Alluvial Avenue between Willow and Chestnut in Fresno. For more information, go to www.uufresno.org.
To get your items listed on the KFCF Community Calendar, send them at least 2 weeks in advance to calendar@kfcf.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Street Heat. This is our monthly celebration of the struggle for workers' rights and social justice. And I'm your host, Pam Whalen. Mike Rhodes is on the controls. We're going to be talking about the Fresno Police Department today. They've had a lot going on there in the last 24 hours with their deputy chief of police has been arrested for selling heroin. And there's all been lots of incidents that community activists have had with the police department recently, and we're going to be talking about those. We're also going to talk later on in our show, we're going to be talking about the 43 missing students in Mexico. There's a caravan that is transversing the United States, and with parents and some of the survivors of that action, where many people were disappeared and presumed to deceased, murdered. We're going to be talking about their visit to Fresno. They're going to be here tomorrow, and they're going to be doing several events tomorrow. But we're going to start off first with talking about the Fresno Police Department. And our first guest here today is Brian Sumner. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And Brian is with the Fresno Liberty Movement, and you have had some interaction with the Fresno Police Department. So why don't you start off, why don't you tell us what the Fresno Liberty Movement is first?
The Fresno Liberty Movement was an idea I had when I got out of the military, just to spread the idea that challenging state violence was a good idea, whether it was police brutality or the way that money is stolen from the middle class and lower class and shifted to the upper class, or whether it was war, foreign aid like we give to Israel to destroy Palestine, and just to help promote more of an idea of just like general peace and freedom.
Okay, and tell us what happened. You've been involved in some activities in Fresno and ran into some trouble with the Fresno police by doing so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started out just filming the police, and then I got more into meeting the more community activists around who were holding rallies and stuff. And as I got more involved with them, we had bigger demonstrations. And at one of the demonstrations, the Fresno Peace Officers Memorial was chalked with just some statements. And so
Why don't you tell us, where is this memorial and what does it look like?
The Fresno Peace Officers Memorial is a big half-circle granite memorial right in front of the Fresno Police Department. And on one side it says Fresno Peace Officers Memorial, and on the other side it has the names of officers who have died while serving as a police officer in Fresno.
Okay. And so describe the event.
We had a rally. It was last year. There had been multiple police shootings. And in Fresno, not from just the FPD, but also from the Sheriff's Department. And so we had a rally in front of the City Hall to address this. And then we had a march to the police station where we rallied again. And during that rally, you know, chalk was passed out and, you know, was written on the ground, was moved to the memorial. And the police, you know, came and started talking to people and detaining others. And eventually, myself and another were arrested and charged with vandalism of less than $400.
Okay. And so, what did you do exactly?
Well, like I said, we had a rally in front of the police department, and the memorial was chalked. And then the police arrested myself and my friend.
Okay. And then what happened?
Well, I thought it was to be dropped, you know, because vandalism, as far as I know, constitutes permanent damage or defacement, and chalk was easily washed off. And so the city is pursuing a trial against me now under criminal charges. And it's rather silly if you think about it, because they're willing to spend $10,000+ to try me for damages of less than $400.
So is this the city, or are you being tried by the district attorney?
By the district attorney.
Yeah, district attorney. Okay. So where's the case right now?
In the second stage of pretrial.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I guess just talk a little bit about, I'm sure you had some ideas and some feelings about the police before this happened, but what are your grievances with the police, and what do you think should be done about it?
Well like I said, started when I got out of the military. I started realizing that military members were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan after committing horrible atrocities, and the state was only finding ways to, protect them from facing the consequences of their actions and find ways to shield them. And then once I got out of the military, I made the same connection that it was happening in the police department too. 3 people a day were killed last year by the police, and not very many were charged. In the case of Eric Garner, there was a police officer choking a man to death on video, and the only person who was charged with that was the guy who videotaped it. And so that's when I started getting more involved in the police actions and started promoting to film the police in your neighborhoods. And eventually here we are now
Tell me about filming the police.
Well, filming the police was just an idea that's been around for a long time. The Black Panthers started doing it. And is basically just to create objective records of what happened to protect people from false accusations by police, but also to hold police accountable for shootings and brutality, and at the same time protect the police from false accusations from the people that they interact with while they do their job.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that evidence will be used to either exonerate an individual or prosecute somebody who acted badly.
Okay, so when you did that, what was the reaction of the police?
I've been arrested for filming the police in Clovis, actually. They charged me with obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
That case was dropped and totally dismissed because I didn't obstruct justice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I was well within my First Amendment right.
Mm-hmm.
And basically now it's been a couple of years that I've been doing anti-police activism. And when you challenge something, you know, power structure like the police, and you can expect to have retribution. You can expect to be harassed. You can expect to have daily harassment from the police, basically. And not only from the police, but the supporters of the police. I get, emails all the time, telling me to go, you know, kill myself and how I'm a terrible person.
Okay. So you're, did you want to say something, Bob? Yeah. We're also joining us in the studio is Bob Navarro, a local attorney and a member of the local chapter, the ACLU.
Yeah. To Brian's comment there about filming the police, during the Occupy Fresno occupation of Courthouse Park, we had the situation where a number of the people who were there as part of the action would film, you know, our meetings, because we had these meetings out in the open in public, and anybody was free to join them. But the police would come by, and they would film us, and they would walk around. I remember this one guy who was wearing this strange outfit. He was obviously a sheriff or a policeman, but he had completely disguised himself. But he was going around with the camera, and we would go up to him and ask him what his name is and what department he was with, and he would just totally avoid us. But he would continue to film our meeting, even though we invited them to join the meeting. So they were filming us, and we were filming them. That was one charge that they never actually levied against us, was that we couldn't film them. And, of course, it's not true that you can't film the police as long as you don't interfere with some actual conduct that they're doing in trying to make an arrest or a detention or for public safety. So that's absolutely not true. It's unconstitutional to prevent somebody from filming the police as long as you're doing it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add, Brian?
Well, for everyone that doesn't know, the assistant chief of police was arrested by the FBI and the ATF yesterday for conspiracy to distribute heroin, marijuana, and oxycodone. And we're definitely ripe for a regime change in the Fresno Police Department. Jerry Dyer, the chief of police, has been a cop, been the chief, retired, came back, and we haven't seen anything really too positive come out of Dyer's administration. A lot of violence, a lot of corruption, a lot of crime. We have multiple officers facing charges right now of taking bribes. Other officers are, facing charges for stealing. And one officer was running an auto theft ring. And, a dead body was found. A dead body of a Fresno police officer was found in Jerry Dyer's front lawn, basically. And, his killer was never found. And I think right now is the time for the city of Fresno to call for a federal investigation, not just into, the drug dealing assistant chief of police, but into the entire Fresno Police Department.
Okay. And so you don't know when your hearing is going to take place, so it's not on
just
calendar or anything.
Pre-trial is on April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, who knows when the actual trial could be.
Okay. So now we're going to turn to talking to Bob Navarro and also Mike Rhodes. And Mike and Bob have been involved with submitting a California Public Records Act request to the police department having some interesting experiences from that. So, Mike, why don't you start and tell us, why you decided to submit this and, kind of what happened?
Sure. Thank you, Pam. I submitted a California Public Records Act request to the Fresno Police Department. I've submitted lots of these in the past. When I was the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper, we would look into a lot of stories about the police, and I would send them a CPRA request, and usually they were responsive within 10 days. That's what they're legally mandated to do. They didn't always provide all of the information that we wanted, but eventually we got most of it, and what we didn't get they had to explain specifically why they weren't giving us that information. So on January 27th, I sent them a request for information about the homeless task force run by the Fresno Police Department. They were the first police unit outfitted with these body-worn video cameras. And I wanted to see the video on those cameras from January 20th. And it was a very specific request, very limited. And we expected to get a response from them that was at least to say, well, this is our policy and, you know, we're not able to release the video for this reason. Or here it is, you could, you know, you could have these CDs. This is the video that was shot. The reason I ask for that is I have a lot of reports from homeless people about abuse by the homeless task force, and I thought this would be a way for me to see what those communications are and what they actually look like, what the police are saying, what the homeless people are saying, and find out what was going on. And it also was a way for me to get a clear indication of their policy about how they're going to release these videos from body-worn cameras. Well, what happened was that the police didn't respond at all. 10 days came and went. I called the person, Peggy Roberts, who is the court liaison for the Fresno Police Department. She's always been very nice, very responsive to me in the past. And she said, oh, I passed that on to an attorney. His last name is Donaldson, in the city attorney's office at City Hall. He will be getting back in touch with you. I waited. I got nothing. I asked again a week or so later. Nothing. Never got a response from them about what their policy was, if they were going to comply with this PR request, a request, or not. And then I asked Bob Navarro, who's with the ACLU and the local chapter of the ACLU, is there anything we can do to get them to respond? It's their legal obligation to respond, but we got nothing from them. And Bob's been helpful.
Okay, so can you take it from there, Bob?
Yes, so we got the information from Mike, and I put together a letter addressed to the police department court liaison, Peggy Roberts, and to Mr. Donaldson, who's the senior deputy city attorney or something like that. You know, reminding them that 54 days had passed and they hadn't responded, as they're legally mandated to do, citing the code section, telling them this is a very specific, narrow request, blah, 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 and to please contact us in 48 hours. And lo and behold, within 48 hours, they sent us their letter. And the letter came from Mr. Donaldson, in the city attorney's office. And he claimed blanket exemptions to disclosure of the videotapes from the body cameras, if there are any videotapes from the body cameras. This response provides no information as to what the police did on the day in issue, January 20th, but they claim exemption under the... There are exemptions to disclosure by the police and other law enforcement agencies under the Public Records Act. They do not have to provide records of complaints or investigations that they are pursuing. And so, but this, in this one, Donaldson said that, first of all, they're not producing anything because they're exempt from disclosure under the security procedures exception. And that's a very strange, it seems to me, exemption to claim here, because first of all, he doesn't explain how security procedures comes into these particular videotapes. I'm drafting a letter in response to this now, and I point out in that letter that we haven't asked for their procedures, for their security procedures. We don't need the details of how they have instructed their officers to act. We're just want the actual tape. Mm-hmm. And I assume if there's an actual tape, it has to do with an encounter that they've had with the citizen, and that that has occurred in a public space, and therefore there's nothing very secret about it. And I doubt that the officer involved is going to be talking about the security procedures of the Fresno Police Department. So it seems to me that the exemption is way overbroad, and there's nothing said in here that supports it. The second exemption that they claim is the investigation exemption. That could have a little more validity because they could be arresting a homeless person for a crime. Somebody stole something, there was some violence or something like that. I mean, it happens in the homeless community as well as anywhere else. If that happened, then they might have a legitimate claim. But because they only make it a blanket exemption and they don't give us any information as to what supports it, there's no way for us to contest it. And so the exemption statute itself says they have to provide the name, the date, the time, and stuff like this. This is common in the law. When you claim a privilege so that you don't have to disclose information, you have to give enough information so that the person requesting the information can test it in court. So, because, I mean, the way it is, we would go into the court and say, well, we don't know what they have. They didn't tell us anything. Maybe they didn't video anything, blah, blah, blah. The court's not going to be particularly pleased with something like that. But all in all, what this will probably lead up to is, my guess is they'll continue to even after getting our response to their letter, claim the exemption, and then we would have to file a writ for petition, a mandate in the Superior Court, request that the court review whatever documents they come up with and determine, and let the court determine what is exempt and what's not, and release to us those documents that are rightfully not within the exemption.
Pam, I think that we should have a right to know what these interactions between the homeless task force, police officers, and homeless people look like. We have asked for that information. They've given us some very vague answers as to why they're withholding that information. I asked the question, what do they have to hide? If they don't have anything to hide, they should just release the video so that we could see what those interactions look like. I would add, too, that in the document that Donaldson sent to me, there's a policy statement about their ability to videotape and record anybody in the public virtually at any time. And then it says, but the public doesn't have that right to record anybody at any time. If they perceive that they had a right to privacy, that they were had some belief that they had this was a private conversation, then we can't record them. So it's sort of they've got it on the one hand where they could record anybody at any time and they don't have to give us that information or show us the video, and on the other hand, we can't record them anytime if they say that they had a reasonable right expectation of privacy.
So they get right. So they don't have any any obligation for transparency at all.
That's very Orwellian, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Right.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to point out in this letter to them. I said, the ostensible purpose of the body camera and all of the discussion about it in all of the police misconduct situations across the country and the call for body cameras for every police department is for the issue of transparency, mm-hmm. to provide a mechanism by which the public can have accountability of the police department and see what they're doing. It's also for the purposes of the security of the police department to protect themselves against false accusations. So they seem to be saying, well, we're not interested in transparency, even though we have made these recordings with people in public, they can't be made public. So it seems to be across purposes with the whole idea of using these devices.
Okay, and you're listening to the KFCF Fresno 88.1. It's 524 on Friday. And we're in, joining us in the studio is Brian Sumner from the Fresno Liberty Movement, who's been talking about his prosecution for chalking. And we've also been talking to Mike Rhodes and Bob Navarro about their efforts to try to get information and transparency from the Fresno Police Department. Also in the studios with us is Ernesto Saavedra, who is the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper. And Ernesto, you have had some interesting encounters with the Fresno Police Department also very recently. All of this has been happening very recently in the last, since the first of the year or so. Okay, so tell us what happened to you.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot going on with the Fresno Police Department. So my interaction with the Fresno Police Department happened earlier this month on March 3rd. The Fresno Police Department, they hold these quarterly media meetings with different media outlets here in Fresno. And the Community Alliance got invited. So I went to go check it out, not really knowing what to expect. The invitation was sent out by Lieutenant Joe Gomez, and it was just very vague. It pretty much just said the time and date and location and to RSVP. So I was kind of like, okay, you know, I'm going to check it out and see what's up. So so I go and check it out, and it seemed like once I get there, it seemed like others were as clueless as I was. Everybody was asking each other, like, you know, has anybody been to these kind of meetings? What is this meeting about? What should we expect? So I obviously was not the only one. So we're waiting there, and then finally Chief Jerry Dyer walks in with his entourage of lieutenants and sergeants, and he sits right next to me. So everybody's chatting. It seems like some folks from the media, some of the mainstream media outlets, and some of the police officers knew each other from like a first name basis. It was kind of like old friends meeting up and stuff like that. Hey, how's it going? You know, and I was just kind of sitting there like, okay, what's going on? What kind of meeting is this? So Dyer begins the meeting and he opens it up. And pretty much he outlines the purposes of the meetings, which is to keep the lines of communication open between the Fresno Police Department and all facets of the media. He also goes on to talk about that Dyer's philosophy regarding the media is to provide the media with as much information as possible. We recognize the role of the media, and we will do our best to provide the most up-to-date information available. So he opens it up, and he kind of references the media's role in everything that's been going on with police brutality, you know, Black Lives Matter and things like that, everything going on in Ferguson and other places in the nation, and how he's glad that here in Fresno pretty much has things under control, right?
Little did he know.
Yeah, so the meeting goes on, and the meeting itself is pretty much about how the Fresno Police Department can help other media outlets get their stories. So there's like an exchange of ideas and stuff like that, and personal information exchange. Pretty much officers were like, contact us directly and things like that. So it was a lot of that. Nothing too substantial happened. So the meeting ends and I'm ready to go. I'm kind of in a hurry. You know, I parked in a meter. I need to go to the restroom. There's all these things going on. And Joe Gomez, Lieutenant Joe Gomez, and Deputy Chief Keith Foster, who, you know, earlier Brian mentioned his situation, they pull me to the side, and they pull me into this hallway, and they close the door behind us. And then they, Keith Foster asked me if I was recording the meeting. I say yes. And he said, he just kind of looks surprised, and then I'm like, what's the problem? And then he's like, oh, you're not supposed to be recording the meeting. It's illegal to record a private meeting. This was a private meeting. You're part of the media. You should have known that to begin with. So I was kind of like, okay, and just kind of left it at that. And then I was just reflecting on it and reflecting on the whole scenario and everything like that. And I was kind of like, wait a minute, what was that about, right? So So I started reflecting on the meeting itself, and I sent them an email with my reflections, kind of, you know, talking about how curious and interesting it was for them to single me out and how they didn't single anybody else out. So, you know, kind of to give y'all some context, so everybody had their notepads and pens out, and then people had their cell phones on the table. As we all know, a lot of cell phones have recording devices on them and stuff like that. I had none of that. So what I did have was a voice recorder. I put it on the table. It was in plain view. Again, Chief Dyer was sitting right next to me. He didn't tell me anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to hide anything. It was just right there. And, you know, I wasn't trying to be secretive. So I was kind of like, what was that about? So I sent them an email, and, you know, a little bit of what the email said was, you know, I was not aware, nor was I given a notice, written or otherwise, that the recording devices were not allowed prior or during the meeting. And then again, I found it interesting that I was the only one being singled out, and nobody else was asked if they were recording the meeting. And I asked them to give me a full explanation as to why I was singled out, and also to provide me with policy about these meetings that specifically says that we cannot have any recording devices there. The response from Keith Foster was that I was surreptitiously recording a private meeting, and that I should familiarize myself with the criminal and civil implications of illegally recording a private meeting. I should carefully review California Penal Code Section 632 et al., and that Chief Dyer will be contacting my employer to convey his concerns as well. So I looked into this penal code, and it does state that pretty much that every person who intentionally and without the consent of all parties to a confidential communication by means of any electronic amplifying or recording devices eavesdrops upon or records the confidential communication, whether the communication is carried on among the parties in the presence of one another or by means of telegraph, telephone, etc., etc., the punishment can be up to $2,500 or imprisonment in county jail, not exceeding 1 year. And within that same penal code, there's also another section. There's section C, which reads that the term confidential communication includes any communication carried on in circumstances as may reasonably indicate that any party to the communication desires it to be confined to the parties thereto, but excludes a communication made in a public gathering or in any legislative, judicial, executive, or administrative proceeding open to the public, or in any other circumstance in which the parties to the communication may reasonably expect that the communication may be overheard or recorded. The emphasis was my own. So I was just, you know, I consulted with a few folks, and they reassured me that it's pretty bogus. And also the fact that, you know, they invited the media to this meeting. They invited the media to this meeting. So definitely there was reasonable expectation that the communication may be overheard or recorded. So that was my interaction, and right now just kind of waiting around to see if the Fresno Police Department does anything on their end. But other than that, I'm going to do what I do and write about it. So that was the case and scenario. So everything that happened recently with Deputy Chief Keith Foster was pretty funny, to say the least, in my opinion.
So maybe he had something to hide.
So maybe he has something to hide, and I think he's the one that needs to worry about some legal troubles, you know. And I don't think they're going to, you know, be spending too much time with me around this. So, you know, I think it's pretty ironic, more than anything, that this is happening and how there's a lot of secrecy, you know, with the Fresno Police Department. And they, you know, when they get asked questions or things like that, or people are just trying to find out information, they're very secretive about it, but they're quick to try to pull that out of us in the community on different facets, whether we're activists or, you know, part of the media or even lawyers, you know.
Maybe what you should do, given the topic of the meeting of trying to create relationships between the media and the police, you should follow up and ask Mr. Tom. Is it Thomas? What's his name? Keith.
Keith Foster.
Oh, Foster. Whether you could interview him, you know, given his present circumstances, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just yeah. to help him out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I'll keep that in mind.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about the media with several folks. Is there anything that we have a few minutes left? Anything people would like to add? I mean, it seems like a lot of things have happened here in very quick succession of, you know, Brian being prosecuted for talking and the police not wanting to comply with the California Public Records Act and not wanting to be recorded at a meeting that was called by them for the media. So it's very, very interesting. Is there anything anybody would like to add?
No, well, I can't think
It's interesting that Mr. Navarro brought up the police don't want to give up these videos, because I wrote an article for the Fresno People's Media about the Fresno police starting to use body cameras, and some of the things that, you know, weren't clear when they made their announcement was like whether body cameras would be available or body camera footage would be available to the public for viewing, whether or not the officers have control of the power button on the body cameras, because in Colorado, 3 out of 4 officers are just turning their cameras off. And that just shows that 75% of Colorado's department is afraid of being held accountable to the public, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, getting these cameras doesn't do much to help the public, you know, trust the police more if we're not even allowed to see the footage, you know? It seems more like these cameras are going to be used for, you know, evidence gathering, and just being able to surveil wherever they go and then come back and look at it later and pick people out.
It does say in the policies that the guidelines for use of the cameras say that they can use the cameras for arrests and detentions, officers assisting arrest or detention, confrontational interactions with citizens, which can cover just about anything given the attitude of the police, mm-hmm. vehicle and foot pursuits, forced entries, interrogations of suspects, you can understand that, and interviews of victims and witnesses. They say video recording of individuals who are picketing, engaged in peaceful protests, or First Amendment protected speech should be avoided unless the officer has to talk to one of them or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it could be used for surveillance purposes, and they don't.
Well, it's almost like just driving around with it on is surveillance. You know, walking around with it on would just be like surveillance, go back and look at it later.
Well, they already have surveillance. I mean, there's surveillance all over the city. We're being surveilled all the time. The other thing that's interesting about these, because we know about similar situations with the prison system, where after many, many lawsuits, they decided that they should have cameras to do certain actions, like to extract an inmate forcibly from his or her cell. They're supposed to have a camera person there to record it for this very purpose, for transparency purposes. And oftentimes, well, at least in one case that I had, they extracted a guy. This was a gentleman on death row up in San Quentin. And lo and behold, their camera didn't work. And they thought they had recorded it, blah, blah, blah. And they said, we can't provide you with the video of this, because the gentleman died as a result of being pepper sprayed to death.
Whoa.
And so when we tried, we had them bring the actual camera that was used and the tape. And we found out that there was no way that the person operating that camera could even push the record button with the they claimed that they had used a tape that was already recorded, and if you try to do that on these recorders, you can't do it. And so it was obvious that they had destroyed the tape, and the case settled soon after. So it'll be interesting in these police situations to find out when they do not record, when they should be recording.
Do they record at their own discretion? Because that's what it kind of sounded like when you read the
No,
said cameras can be used for, you know, detainments, pursuits,
no,
confrontations.
Expected. They are expected to record.
Okay, so
under
they're expected to record, but it's not required per se.
Well, we could parse over the words, but I would say, if I were representing, you know, someone on the other side of the issue, that this requires them to record in those situations. There could be exceptions where there's just such an emergency, like somebody's bleeding on the ground or something like that, and
do
they
have
to attend to that.
Do you know anything about where these cameras are going? Who is wearing them?
Other than the homeless task force, I don't know.
Okay, because I was
okay. Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up here. I know it's an interesting conversation, but I listen to KFCF Fresno 88.1, where we've been talking about various incidents with the Fresno Police Department in the last few months. Very interesting, particularly in light of the arrest of the chief deputy chief of the police department yesterday. And we're also going to be talking about the caravan of the folks coming from the parents of the missing students in Mexico. We're going to take a brief break and we're going to come back. So come back and be sure to stay with us to talk, find out what's happening with that in Fresno. They're going to be here tomorrow.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar. Mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quebraley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Argelino clandestino, nigeriano clandestino, boliviano clandestino, mano negra ilegal.
And you're listening to KFCF Fresno 88.1. This is the Street Heat Show, our monthly celebration of the struggle for workers' rights and social justice. Joining us in the studio, we have Leoncio Vasquez from the Centro Binacional Huaqueño, and we also have Ernesto Saavedra from the Community Alliance newspaper. And on the phone, we have Estanisleo Mendoza. Welcome. Everyone,
you,
are you there? Yes. Okay. So we're going to be talking about the caravana, which is consists of parents and others involved with the 43 missing students in Mexico. And Leoncio, you want to start and tell us what exactly happened and what was the context that it happened in that these 43 students wound up missing?
Right. So basically our understanding is that in Mexico, in a rural area in the state of Guerrero, there's this university or college where they prepare young students to be teachers. And I mean, it has been a long history that of lack of resources, of lack of support from the government to this college, basically. So what the students were searching for, as anybody in Mexico, like the teachers union in the state of Oaxaca, they take the streets, they do marches every year in order to get some support from the government. So these students were trying to do the same thing, and that's when they clash with the police force, the state, the municipal, to our knowledge, the federal army came responding, and that's how all this tragedy started, where the state police, to our understanding, took the 43 students away, and basically they turned them to the organized crime. So up until now, we don't know exactly what happened, who took the students, and basically it has passed 7 months, 6 months, and we have not heard any like real evidence of the disappearance of these students. The Mexican government, the president of Mexico, declared officially that these students were killed in the hands of the landlords of the organized crime.
So there was the landowners that killed them?
No, those who deal with trafficking.
Oh, okay.
Drugs.
So drug traffickers.
Drug dealers, yes.
Okay, and they were handed over to the drug dealers by the police and the army.
That's correct.
Okay, so Estanislao, do you have anything to add?
And he speaks Spanish,
okay.
I will have to interpret for him.
Okay, so Estanislao, si puedo también darnos algo de la historia de cómo salió este evento en México.
Mire, lo que traemos aquí, hablando de cómo pasó, pues viene un muchacho, y sobreviviente, el que les va a contar ahora que lleguemos allá en Fresno. Él vivió en el lugar de los hechos y viene con nosotros. Yo le puedo contar de lo que después, lo que andamos haciendo, buscando después de lo que sucedió, esa masacre que hubo en Iguala.
Okay. Vamos a interpretar.
So basically, what he's saying is that one of those students who survived this violence is touring with a caravan that is going to be here in Fresno starting tomorrow. He's not present there, but that's the reason that they're having this tour throughout the Pacific Coast to tell their stories to, and he's going to talk about this tomorrow.
Okay. Sigue.
¿Puede continuar, por favor?
Sí, yo soy padre de familia, y que me llamo Estanislao Mendoza, y mi hijo se llama Miguel Ángel Mendoza. Sí, por ahí, y eso es lo que andamos nosotros buscando, ayuda aquí los latinos que nos apoyen para que, hay muchas formas como apoyar también desde aquí.
So basically, he's one of the parents, and he's the parent of Miguel Ángel Mendoza, who is one of the students who was disappeared. And he is here basically to ask for support for the community in this country, because there are a lot of ways to support. ¿Puede continuar?
Sí, invitando para nosotros, vamos a estar mañana ahí en Fresno, y esperar para invitar a toda la comunidad que nos escuche. Vamos a llegar mañana, hoy en la noche vamos a llegar, pero tenemos evento no sé a dónde, a las 10 de la mañana, y más tarde va a haber otro evento, pues, donde vamos a decir toda la historia de lo que está pasando allá en Ayotzinapa. por eso queremos que que inviten más gente ustedes de allá de la radio, porque hay muchos paisanos ahí en Fresno, y yo soy de Apango, Guerrero, y yo sé que hay algunos que a lo mejor me están escuchando, hay paisanos que ahí trabajan a los alrededores, pues, trabajando en el campo, y esa gente necesitamos para que nos vayan y escuchar dónde vamos a estar. Ahorita no tengo el lugar donde vamos a estar, pero ahí vamos a llegar, ahí se darán cuenta ustedes donde ya estamos, se les llamará otra vez a lo mejor.
So basically, they're on their way to Fresno. They're arriving this tonight, actually in Farmersville, and tomorrow morning we're starting the event. So they're going to be here, and basically what they're asking is the support from the community. He's from Apango, Guerrero, which his understanding is that there are other people from that town here in Fresno, and hopefully they're listening to him, so they can go and be part of these activities that are going to be happening starting tomorrow, so they can learn about the experience that they are going through with the disappearance of their children. So basically, if Ernesto can let us know about the specific activities tomorrow and probably Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. And before I do that, I just wanted to emphasize again the reason why they're coming to the United States is to bring awareness and to also gain support, right? But the U.S. government has something to do with the violence happening in Mexico and how this all came about, right? There's this legislation called Merida Plan that supposedly is to fight against drugs, and you know, so that money gets funneled in to support the police and the military and other things like that. But the Mexican government uses it to suppress social leaders, students, and news reporters for opposing different economic reforms that are pretty much privatizing things. One of them being water. Right, so this is all happening in Mexico. So there's a lot of connections, and I know some folks listening might not think there is, but you know, it's all full circle. So with that, there's going to be some events happening starting March 28th. There's going to be a press conference at 11.
Which is tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's tomorrow, Saturday. There's going to be a press conference at 11 a.m. at Fresno State at the Peace Garden. Just in case folks don't know where Fresno State is at, it's 5241 North Maple Avenue, 93740 here in Fresno. And then following that press conference, there's going to be a public informative forum in which folks are going to be able to hear firsthand from the family members of these disappeared students. And that's going to be taking place at the Gross Industrial Technology Building, room 101. And then later that evening, there's going to be a vigil at 5 p.m. outside of the Mexican consulate here in Fresno. And the Mexican consulate is located at 7435 North Ingram Avenue here in Fresno, 937.
It's kind of like right along Herndon there.
Yeah, it's like Herndon and Ingram. There's like a you know, these different shopping centers and everything like that. So all that's going to be happening. And if folks have any questions regarding any of this stuff, they can contact Jorge Valdovinos at 559-908-1063. And again, it's very, very important that folks go out and support this, because it everybody has something to do with it, whether indirectly or directly. And we're also asking folks to not only support with them showing up, but also support financially. You know, that could be either by donating directly or by going and donating in our GoFundMe account that we have. What you can do is you can go to hashtag Caravana 43 Fresno, Caravana, Caravana 43 Fresno, and just go there as hashtag. And we also have a Facebook under the same name. Go there and it'll lead you to our GoFundMe page. And then we're also going to have some t-shirts to sell to help support. And all these funds are just to support the caravan. So lodging, transportation, and food. So basic necessities, you know, that folks need to do this, because they're doing this by their own will. They're not being supported by any political party. They're not pushing any type of political agenda. what they're pushing is justice. So we're asking folks to come out and check it out.
Okay. I don't know, Leoncio, do you want to talk a little bit
sure.
about...
Oh, sure. And probably if there people are not available tomorrow, because, I mean, there are a lot of events going on, they can also join us on Sunday. On Sunday, especially at 2 p.m., that's where we're going to have all the caravan members at the Community Center for the Arts and Technology, 1603 E Street. Here in Fresno, where we're going to have a meal together and also have a little program for them to kind of say farewell for them to go to the next city.
Okay, and are there particular things that they're asking for, the things that they think would be, political solutions? I mean, obviously they want to find out what happened to their family members, but Ernesto, I see you're looking at your screen.
Yeah. There's definitely goals for the tour. So obviously that the 43 disappeared students be brought back alive. Also that through judiciary and the criminal system, by finding and indicting the responsible people and parties of the crime. Also, there be accountability from the Mexican government to assume responsibility of the events that led to the disappearance of the 43 students, and its lack of addressing this crisis in a timely manner. Also, that there be international review by the independent monitoring system, such as the United Nations, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and the International Court of Justice. And again, being that the U.S. is related, connected to this, there be reconsideration of U.S. assistance to Mexico, similar to what Amnesty International has done and other human rights organizations. They've stepped back from supporting different governments that suppress people. So are asking, as the U.S. State Department itself has reported, that the Mexican government and its military and police regularly violate the human rights of its citizens through the arbitrary arrest, torture, and even extrajudicial executions. So based on those facts, the U.S. should reconsider assistance to Mexico, especially around the Plan Merida. Those are some of the goals and some of the things that folks want to bring awareness to with this caravan, this tour.
And I know... Leoncio and also Estanislao, I know there's been a lot of violence in Mexico, a lot of it related to the drug trade, and a lot of speculation as to what the government's role is with the drug trade. And you've been to Mexico, you go back every year. What can you say about that? What does it feel like to be there?
Well, to the place that I go to, Oaxaca, is less of this kind of movement. In the state of Guerrero, in the state of Michoacán, is where you can see all this going on, and people have said that that it is out of control. That even community themselves are taking matters in their hands to organize themselves and come up with security measure in each town so they can go against what's happening in Mexico.
Okay, and Estanislao, ¿quiere dar algo? Ya nomás tenemos un minuto, algo que quiere agregar en este momento.
Miren, nomás invitarles pues a toda la comunidad hispana para que nos apoye y nos siga apoyando, pues, y que los esperamos mañana en los eventos que vamos a tener nosotros allá, estando con toda la ciudadanía que nos quiera apoyar, que se una a nosotros, que como Ayotzinapa queremos ese apoyo.
So basically inviting all the public, especially the Hispanics and the public at large, to be there tomorrow and join us and support Ayotzinapa.
Okay, thank you very much. We've been talking with Ernesto Saavedra from the Community Alliance newspaper, Leoncio Vasquez from the Centro Binacional, and Estanislao Mendoza, one of the fathers of the one of the students that was disappeared in Mexico. You've been listening to the Street Heat program here on KFCF Fresno 88.1. And now we're going to take you back to the KPFA Evening News.
Depende el futuro.